Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. If you're like me, you watched last week with absolute astonishment as the FBI raided former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, saying that they were looking for documents and perhaps concerned that he had violated a number of federal laws, including the Espionage Act. Now, we still don't know exactly what the FBI agents found, but we know the FBI searched Trump's home because he had taken some things that he was not supposed to. While leaving office, he apparently took 15 boxes of documents that were supposed to be under the supervision of the National Archives and Records Administration. More notably, he took a number of documents that were marked classified, which had raised the concern of the FBI. Now, because this story is still ongoing, there are just a lot of things that we don't know. We don't know whether Trump has actually broken any laws, in fact, even though in the warrant, the Department of Justice talks about several possible laws that might be in play here. We also don't know what would happen to him if he did indeed break those laws. We're in somewhat of uncharted territory here, given that he is the former chief executive of our nation. And as noted, we don't even really know what the FBI found when it raided this house. We have no idea what was in these boxes or what these documents are. But we do know that this is a very serious set of circumstances. We know it hasn't happened before. There is no former president who has seen his house raided by federal agents looking for anything. Even Richard Nixon, after he resigned the presidency, didn't face that kind of scrutiny. We also know that there have been concerns for a long time about Donald Trump's relationships with foreign entities, and that some of the things that are alleged to be among the documents here would be things of interest to some of those foreign entities. And again, we really don't know what Merrick Garland, who is the Attorney General of the United States, has in mind here. Was this just an effort to retrieve documents that the Department of Justice didn't want to have out there? Or was this an effort to gather evidence in support of an indictment of the former president? It's a little bit of a confusing time, and of course, the airwaves, both television and radio, are full of really robust opinions about what's happening and what should happen. But we want to have a little more of a sober conversation here about the context, the politics, and of course the legal issues that surround this search. What's really going on here? What's possible out of all of this? And what should ordinary Americans really be concerned about? We've got two great guests with us to help unpack all of this. Nicholas Wu is a congressional reporter at Politico, and he has been following the FBI investigation at Mar-a-Lago. Nicholas, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thanks so much for having me, Stephen.
Also here with us is Mark Chutko. He is the leader of the Dykema Law Firm's Government Investigations and Corporate Compliance Team, and he is a former assistant U.S. attorney here in Southeast Michigan. Mark, welcome to Detroit Today.
Morning, Stephen. Happy to be here.
So, Nicholas, I want to go back to last week and talk about exactly what happened and what the justification we have been given so far is for this unprecedented raid on a former president's home.
Yeah, so what we're looking at so far, Stephen, is evidence that the Justice Department was investigating former President Trump for potential obstruction of justice and violations of the Espionage Act relating to basically how this classified information was handled at Mar-a-Lago. What we got What was formally unsealed last Friday was the warrant for the search of the president's home and the receipt of items that the FBI took from former President Trump's house. And so we were able to get a glimpse at, you know, what exactly they were what exactly they found, including, you know, boxes of documents. There were documents labeled top secret inside, and there were other items that we still don't know a whole lot about, including one that, at least according to the FBI, was just labeled info regarding the president of France. The embassy of France declined to comment on this. But basically, all this is shaping up to show that, you know, this was a much more mature investigation than you know, we had thought previously. That you know, we're finally starting to see the DOJ go public with what they're looking at here. Now, there's still a whole lot we don't know, right? That obviously a search for all this is not, you know, proof of guilt for any potential crimes, and we're a long way, we're a ways away, rather, from, you know, any informal charging decision here. But you know, at the very least, it's a very dramatic turn in this investigation, and something that had previously been more under the radar.
And talk about the presidential context here. As some of former President Trump's defenders have said, presidents do take lots of documents with them when they leave office. They look, the way in which that happens, I guess, looks really different than it has in this case. But what is it about the way in which Donald Trump took these documents and the interaction he had with DOJ over the past few years about those documents made this look really different?
Well, it was kind of no surprise that that there were issues with how the former president would have handled documents, right? Like the retention of documents during the Trump administration has been a perennial issue, right? Like, you know, it's been reported in the past about Trump's habit of tearing up important documents, you know, tweeting out things that were previously classified and the like. But of course, you know, the president has, as president, has unilateral power to declassify documents. And so, you know, Trump could simply say that, you know, he wanted to declassify information when he was president. However, in post-presidential life, this is something a little different, right? Normally, there is a whole process for preserving and retaining presidential records once someone leaves office. That's what the National Archives is for. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, kind of how we got to this point, right? We know that, I think it was actually in February that the National Archives revealed that there were issues about classified information being stored at Mar-a-Lago. And there were issues about, actually, even before all this, there were 15 boxes of information of presidential records that were recovered from Mar-a-Lago and taken back to the archives. And so, what's new here is really the Justice Department's involvement in this, as, you know, moving this from beyond the realm of a presidential records National Archives issue and into something that becomes more of a legal Justice Department problem.
Yeah. So, Mark Chutko, I want to bring you into the conversation here as a former AUSA. Let's start with this. Is it your belief that you would have to have something really potentially important and significant to have to be able to go to a judge and say, I need a search warrant for the former president's home? I guess I'm trying to get some sense of the scale of, I guess, how big a deal this is, that they were able to get this warrant, that they executed it, and the conversations, I guess, that would have taken place in the run-up to that about the sensitivities that surround something like this.
Yeah, I think you've got it right. It has to do with the status of the person being investigated. Search warrants are being executed every day all around the country, and that's based on a simple principle that if a neutral and detached judge, in this case a magistrate judge, finds that there's probable cause that a crime has been committed and that evidence or fruit of the crime is going to be found in a location, the judge is required to issue a warrant, and they happen each and every day. What makes this different, obviously, is that it's the former president of the United States, which makes this completely unprecedented. And what's interesting is to try to figure out whether the warrant is primarily for the purpose of advancing a criminal investigation or whether it's simply an effort to assist the National Archives in getting its documents back. It may be a little bit of both. Warrants can be executed for seizure of contraband, for seizure of money, for purposes of forfeiture. And so in this case, the government is looking at these classified records likely as contraband, as documents that should not be in private hands and that need to be back in the National Archives. And so they're looking for a method to get it back. I'm assuming that there's been an escalating series of approaches here before we got to this point. As Nicholas indicated, the National Archives early this year had requested these documents back sometime in January. When that didn't work, a federal grand jury issued a subpoena commanding that the documents be returned to the grand jury itself. That apparently resulted in a series of negotiations in June in Mar-a-Lago, where DOJ officials went down there and talked with the former president's lawyer. And apparently he even had stopped by at one point. And so I'm guessing that Attorney General Garland, after a series of conversations with other members of his office, decided that none of these other steps had worked and that they were going to have to take this aggressive and quite unprecedented move, which was to execute a search warrant.
Yeah. So I also want to talk about the potential criminal implications here. As we learned from the unsealing of the warrant, there were a couple of statutes that the DOJ cited as potentially implicated here. One was about obstruction of justice. The other is about the Espionage Act. Talk about how serious either of those, I guess, is, and especially the rarity, I guess, of implicating espionage, for instance, with the name of a former president.
Yeah, that term certainly has a pejorative context to it. The Espionage Act is quite complicated, and there's many different ways to violate it. It appears here that what the Justice Department is focusing on is the unauthorized retention or disclosure of information related to the national defense that could, if it got into the wrong hands, be used to harm the United States. This is a statute that has frequently been used in connection with leaks to the news media of classified and other sort of national security information. And so it's a serious offense. It's got a maximum term of 10 years imprisonment. The other statute is one that I used quite a bit, Section 1519, impeding or obstructing a federal investigation. This one was created by the Sarbanes-Oxley Act in the wake of the Enron and Arthur Andersen scandals. Mm-hmm. And in this one, it is alleged that either the president or members of the staff or others may have attempted to impede or obstruct an investigation. So that may be related to the combination of the federal grand jury subpoena, the request by the National Archives for the records, the meeting of Department of Justice officials down in Mar-a-Lago. I'm told that the department has asked specifically for video taped evidence of the hallway in and around where the storage area was, where many of these records were kept. That would, in my estimation, be an attempt to see if there is corroboration for the idea that there was obstruction. So, for instance, in June, were a number of aides and staff members scurrying around, going in and out of that storage room, taking boxes in and out, either before or after that meeting, that would show an intent to obstruct. And the last charge is one that I've never encountered before. It seems fairly esoteric. It talks about the willful and unlawful removal or destruction of government records. And that has to do, the three-year offense, I think what is interesting about it is the potential collateral consequence that it would prohibit a defendant who was convicted of it of holding future federal office. And if that one was the charge that ultimately stuck here, I could imagine that there could be some constitutional challenges on that. The one thing that I think is interesting is what hasn't been charged here, and that specifically is Section 1924 of Title 18 of the United States Code. That's the unauthorized removal and retention of classified documents. That would be the standard charge that you would bring if you thought that classified information had been unlawfully taken or possessed. That was the charge, I believe, that Hillary Clinton was being investigated about during the uptick to the 2016 campaign and election. And former CIA director and general David Petraeus was also charged or considered being charged with that act, and I think eventually pled guilty to a misdemeanor of unauthorized removal and retention of classified information. And so the fact that that charge is not amongst the three that have been identified in the warrant suggests to me that perhaps the department is trying to play it safe because they're concerned that perhaps the president, it's unclear when it comes to a president what they can and cannot declassify. And to remove that as a potential impediment from a criminal prosecution, they may have decided instead to list these other statutes that don't require as an element classified information being retained.
Yeah. I'm talking right now with Nicholas Wu, who's a congressional reporter at Politico, who's covered former President Trump's impeachment trials, is following the FBI's investigation of Mar-a-Lago. Also with us, who you were just listening to, is Mark Chutko. He is a leader of the Dykema Law Firm's Government Investigations and Corporate Compliance Team, also a former assistant U.S. attorney here in Southeast Michigan. We're talking about this raid last week on Mar-a-Lago, the home of former President Donald Trump, the retrieval of 15 boxes of documents that were supposed to be under the supervision of the National Archives. What was Donald Trump doing with those boxes and documents? And was his possession of those documents a crime? Was he potentially breaking the law? We want to hear from you during the conversation, of course, as well. Give us a call and tell us what you make of this unprecedented search of a former president's home. You think the FBI should have done that? Do you think maybe this was overreach or unwarranted in some way? Do you think it's more about politics than it is about the law? Also, give us a sense of what you think of the DOJ's investigation. Now very clear that there is an investigation into the former president and his behavior, both in the White House and after. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Let's go first to Bernadette in Old Redford. Bernadette, what's on your mind? I think, Bernadette, call us back. We'll get you back on. Let's go next to Frank in Livonia. Frank, what's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, Stephen. The thing that I'm concerned about is the treatment of the FBI agents when Trump, let their names be known. I mean, we're seeing more and more of this. It's a January 6th attack on, the police. And, you see it at, poll workers. I've worked on the polls and the intimidation by people. And I just think that it's going to be really difficult to get people in law enforcement to keep doing this job if they're attacked like this. And I guess that's, a big step towards a fascist state. And I see that coming. It's very discouraging to see that coming out of that. If we don't, it's one thing to have laws, but if you don't have law enforcement that's independent and, respected by the politicians, we have nothing.
Yeah. Frank, really appreciate the call and those thoughts. Nicholas Wu, this would have been something that Merrick Garland would have had to spend an awful lot of time thinking about, I imagine, which is not just the legal implications of this, but the cultural and social implications and the timing. We're just a few months from the midterm elections. We are certainly just a few months from candidates for the 2024 presidential contest starting to raise their hands and say that they're interested. To talk about the way that these things all have some effect on the decision making at the DOJ.
The Attorney General has made it clear that this was something that he actually signed off on. He said last Friday, right, that he had been the one to approve the decision to seek a search warrant in the first place. And I think for the Department of Justice, having been burned so badly before, in the course of the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails, for example, and the political headwinds they faced during the Trump years, right? This is not a decision that they would have to take lightly, and it speaks to what probably is the body of evidence that the Department of Justice has gathered, not only in this investigation, but into its other parallel investigation into the efforts by Trump and his allies to subvert the 2020 election. I mean, the search of Mar-a-Lago, right, was just part of this whole constellation of investigations that DOJ is pursuing. They've been issuing grand jury subpoenas for some time for documents and testimony related to the subversion of the 2020 election. We saw agents search the home of Jeffrey Clark, right, the former DOJ official who Trump and his allies tried to elevate to the top of DOJ to an effort to investigate election results, right? A day after the Mar-a-Lago search, as part of another parallel investigation by the DOJ, we saw FBI agents seize the phone of Congressman Scott Perry, a Republican from Pennsylvania who had been wrapped up in a lot of these election challenge efforts. And, it appears that this is all still, there's a lot more to come.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the raid on Mar-a-Lago, former President Trump's home in Florida. We'll also continue to hear from you guys on the phones and on social. Brad in Shelby Township, Jerry in Detroit, Dan in Southfield. We'll get to you next if you want to join them. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Steve Henderson, your host, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Right now, we're talking about the raid on Donald Trump's home in Mar-a-Lago, Florida, last week by FBI agents approved by Attorney General Merrick Garland. They were looking for documents that Donald Trump took with him when he left the White House and went to Florida, documents that the DOJ says he had not cooperated in returning. We're talking also about the political and legal context for all of this, the things that DOJ may be thinking about, may be looking into with regard to the former president. We want to hear from you what you think about this kind of raid on a former president's home. What do you think about the documents that he had? What might he have been doing with them? And was this all warranted or unwarranted in your mind? Was this something that is about the law or is maybe about politics? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today and we'll work you into the conversation that way. Let's go to Brad in Shelby Township. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hi. I don't know. I just have my opinion. But this is just a continuation of January 6th. Trial. I mean, anything to, badmouth a political opponent. Biden says he doesn't know anything. Oh, please, come on. He probably started, his team is doing all this for him. It's just to divert attention from his inability to lead.
So, Brad, if Donald Trump, as it turns out, had classified nuclear documents that he wasn't supposed to have, which there are some reports that suggest that that's the case, you don't think that the Department of Justice is justified in doing that, in retrieving those documents from him?
No, not. I don't think they will. I mean, you said that, you know, some reports. Yeah, well, I wonder who's putting out some of them reports. And it's politics. That's all it is. Yeah. It's politics. I also remember reading about Bill Clinton. One member of his team stole some stuff, and he got fined like $50,000 or something like that. You'd have to look it up.
Brad,
but, you know, please.
Brad, I really appreciate the call and the perspective. Thanks very much for, you know, being a listener here. Mark Chutko, there's a lot of this kind of talk about the DOJ and its role as a legal enforcer, but also its political context. And as Brad says, he doesn't believe that politics don't play a role in all of this. You were an assistant U.S. attorney here in Southeast Michigan. Tell us how that all gets sorted out.
Well, it was it's a bit easier when you're in Detroit as a working at a field U.S. attorney's office.
Right.
You're not in the middle of the Beltway and some of the political considerations. But I think it is important to know here that the president, Biden, expressed surprise when he heard about the search of Mar-a-Lago. None of his staff had been advised of this at all, and they learned about it from the news media. So I think that is reestablishing to some extent the norms that we expect, that there is going to be a bit of a disconnect between the Department of Justice and the White House when it comes to matters of law enforcement. Normally, there's supposed to be a specific line where only two people liaise with each other when it comes to prosecutions that involve political considerations. But I do think that the point Brad raises is an important one. Obviously, a lot of the country is looking at the Department of Justice and some of its actions through a partisan lens. The Democrats were doing that too when James Comey, the director of the FBI, announced both the investigation and Hillary Clinton's server, and then the discontinuation of that. And so that is something that I think that the FBI and the department are working hard to be quieter and not to be so out front and in the news, because it does create collateral consequences for them. We saw a person attacked the Cincinnati field office of the FBI, eventually died in a shootout just recently, allegedly in connection with the Mar-a-Lago search. The magistrate judge, who just happened to be on duty that day, or actually was replacing somebody who was supposed to be on duty to sign this search warrant, is now under threat, and the marshals are providing him protection. The consideration and the concern of the politicization of the department has a spillover effect in other court cases out there. As you know, Stephen, we currently on the Western District of Michigan have a case right now involving an alleged kidnapping plot of Governor Whitmer over mask mandates and other sorts of things. And jurors in the jury selection process there expressed skepticism about law enforcement. They may be reading the news right now and wondering to themselves, you know, are these the same FBI agents that executed on the warrant on the Mar-a-Lago? And that could cause them some suspicion of the case that is currently in the Western District. And so I do think it's important for the department to try to take a step back, stay away from politics. And that's why the department does have certain norms, like not bringing cases, especially criminal cases, with a political content to them within 60 or 90 days of an election. I should say that this is slightly different in that if this was 60 or 90 days from a presidential election, I think that these considerations would be more important. Because,
it would be a really different context, no question.
Right, you know? Yeah. Right. Yeah, this is a congressional election. Former President Trump is not up for re-election right now. So I think that attenuates it a little bit from a political consideration. But, yeah. You know, one thing I was going to say is that, you know, some have suggested that there might be a pretext here, that this is not, in fact, a search for national security-related documents or classified documents, but in fact is an attempt to bootstrap off of that in order to collect documents related to January 6th, which Brad had mentioned. And, that January 6th is not mentioned as one of the potential violations that is in the warrant itself. Mm. If the agents were duly authorized to be in a location and if they saw in plain view documents that related to January 6th, they could collect them. But we don't have any evidence that there's a pretextual basis for why they're doing the searches here. It seems like they, especially by the documents that have been included on the property receipt, it does appear that they were collecting records that were related to classified or national security documents.
Yeah. Again, Brad, appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go back to Bernadette in Old Redford. She's back with us. Bernadette, what's on your mind?
Hi, Stephen. I want to know, how were those removed from the White House? Because if I go to the library and it's in their valuable collection, they won't let me leave. They didn't have to.
You can't just walk out the door with it.
Yeah, did they just have a U-Haul and drive them down to Mar-a-Lago? The other thing that I'm curious about is, why didn't Trump destroy those documents rather than to hang on to them? So we're not just talking about the last 15 boxes, but the ones that they got before this most recent trip down to retrieve the documents.
Yeah, Bernadette, those are both great questions. I really appreciate the call. Nicholas Wu, this is something that most Americans don't probably have a terrible amount of knowledge about, which is, after you're done being president of the United States, there are lots and lots of documents that go with you under the care of the National Archives. But talk a little about that process and how these 15 boxes ended up in the former president's house, I guess, instead of under that kind of official care.
Yeah, Bernadette, that's a really good question. Since, when was the last time we saw this much focus on presidential records? Right. Normally,
right.
under slightly different circumstances, there is a somewhat established procedure for what happens to presidential records after the executive leaves office. Right. They work with the National Archives. Eventually, a presidential library is set up, and that's all handled. The thing is, most of that information generally, it doesn't have to do with anything classified, right? Like, think about the bulk of the material that you see in a presidential library, right? They're interesting inner workings of the executive's office, but they're not necessarily issues pertaining to national security, or at the very least, if they do pertain to national security, the former president is supposed to follow the appropriate laws for disposing of or giving back that material. In this case, however, there's some reporting to suggest that at the end of the Trump presidency, remember, the inauguration day was January 20th, 2021, just a couple weeks after January 6th, and you had this incredibly chaotic period in the final few weeks of the Trump presidency. And so there's some reporting to suggest that it was an incredibly chaotic pack-up at the end of the Trump White House. And so that's how you start to have some of this material taken down with the former president to Mar-a-Lago and kept there rather than given back to the National Archives for the proper storage. We still don't know exactly what the basis for all this material is, right? We have these somewhat loose descriptions from the FBI's receipt. We have some reporting suggesting that there could be nuclear secrets within these materials. And there's still a whole lot we don't know, and it'll take some time to figure this out. Perhaps when the affidavit underlying all of this comes to light. But we'll have to wait and see when that happens.
Yeah. Okay. Mark Chucko and Nicholas Wu, it was really great to have both of you here to shine a little light on what is going on at the DOJ and at Mar-a-Lago. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Very happy to be here.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we are going to discuss how close America is to breaking apart. Think of all the tension that is being unleashed and fueled by things like the raid on Mar-a-Lago last week. Are we getting closer to something cataclysmic, like a split of America or a civil war? Barbara Walter, who's a professor at the University of California, San Diego, and an expert on civil wars and violent extremism, will join us next to talk about it. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.